Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
Pretty much every area of the country except one experienced developing or expanding drought during the month of August. If we look at the maps and just kind of change maps compared to what we saw at the end of July versus on August 27th, that is where we see some pretty rapid expansion in the west across much of the Great Plains into the mid-south and then the deep south as well.
Brad Rippey with USDA.
Even parts of the Midwest starting to see an increase in drought coverage. Really, the main exception to that was along the East Coast, where we saw the impact from Hurricane Debbie earlier in August, and that did produce some wetter conditions extending through the Carolinas, Virginia, and eventually into the Northeast. That is the sole area where we saw widespread improvement in the drought situation during the month of August.
This is Agriculture Today.
The August update to USDA's trade outlook increased imports and exports for fiscal year 2024. Betty Resnick, an economist at the American Farm Bureau Federation, talks about what the numbers show.
Increasing the overall forecasted exports to $173.5 billion and reduced the trade deficit by $1.5 billion to $30.5 billion. Now, this is the first time we're also seeing fiscal year 2025 estimates, which are forecasting exports to fall and imports to increase, leading to a new record trade deficit of $42.5 billion, which will be the third year of record trade deficits.
Resnick says there are multiple factors contributing to the deficit, but the main factor is commodity prices.
A lot of this all boils down to falling commodity prices. Wheat, corn, feeds, and fodders over 2 years all show drops in export value, but significant increases in volumes exported. And that's those unit prices, those commodity prices. For soybeans, exports on both value and volume basis are projected downwards between 2023 and 2025 based on increasing competition from Brazil. All exports continue to be hamstrung by the strong U.S. dollar, which also at the same time increases imports, which exacerbates that trade deficit.
She says the deficit is yet another indicator that farmers and ranchers may be looking at choppy financial waters ahead.
Sound like a broken record, but on those commodity prices for grains, oilseeds, and cotton, as those products make up a little under half of our total exports by value. Some products, though, especially soybeans and cotton, are seeing both declining export volumes and values, which is really painful at this moment. And it's again due to that increased global competition and geopolitical factors. But exports are vital to the farm economy and bring value to the American farmer. So it's important that we pay attention.
As Americans head to their backyard grills to celebrate the end of summer, Barrett Nelson, an economist for the American Farm Bureau Federation, says consumers may see some much-needed slight savings as retail prices decrease from unprecedented highs.
Beef prices set records in the month of July. If we take a look at USDA and ERS's estimates for the all-fresh beef value, that all-fresh value for the month of July was $8.15 per pound. Now, this is important because it marks the first time in the history of data collection here that the all-fresh average moved above $8. So we had a lot of cuts that have moved up in price, especially through that July timeframe.
Nelson says supply of cattle will remain tight for the foreseeable future due to the long-term nature of the cattle production cycle, keeping costs high.
So to get the forces driving this beef, it is mostly the low inventory. And this goes back several years. You know, we've been talking about this since 2020. And as these prices have improved, there's business incentives for farmers to keep selling cattle. And that's kept us contracting or moving along in this contraction phase of the cattle cycle. Now, thinking about this, there's also a lot of obstacles to growth here. And as long as those incentives are greater than the incentive to keep, we're going to keep contracting in this phase.
He says consumers should remember that even though they may be paying more at the meat counter, that increase doesn't necessarily make it back to the farmer.
A farmer will see about 34 cents of every retail dollar comes back to the farmer with regards to beef production. But we're still not seeing really strong profitability here. That retail dollar does not mean that's what the farmer makes. The packer is really seeing the largest market share in this scenario, and the farmer has the least control out of all ends.
Chad Smith, Washington.
And you're listening to Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
Oh, man, it takes me in a number of different directions, so we can spend the rest of the day talking about it.
What could we spend all day talking about? How about the World Trade Organization? Bart Fisher with the Ag and Food Policy Center.
One of the first, you know, gut reactions I get when I talk to growers is who cares what the WTO thinks, right? I mean, and that's a very popular perspective out there. I mean, it admittedly, I mean, politics in general are trending in a more populist direction. And so, you know, increasingly, you know, I hear from folks that, you know, we don't want to worry, you know, we're going to worry about our own country first. And that's all well and good until you focus on the fact, you know, that a third of the farm income in this country comes from crops that we export. You know, over 95% of the stomachs on planet Earth reside outside of our borders. And so U.S. agriculture has long relied on exports. And with that said, you know, I'm under no illusions that the WTO has worked incredibly well, right? I mean, we got to be on the receiving end of the dispute settlement process for over a decade on the cotton case. And admittedly, we had some successes there, too. But that process is sort of ground to a halt. The dispute settlement process is largely ground to a halt. And so I think we're at this point in time where, you know, folks are looking at inwardly frustrated over how, you know, the international trade conversation has gone. And that's all understandable. But I, you know, in my view of the world, we've got to get back to having those conversations. And that even for agriculture in our country, you know, we can't just be looking internally. We've got to be looking at, you know, at export opportunities. And certainly we're doing that on the market promotion side, right? Congress is contemplating doubling the funding that we put, you know, towards programs like MAP and FMD. But, you know, for the, you know, the bodies that set the global, you know, the global trade rules, I think those have got to be functioning as well. In part because, I mean, trade, you know, enforcement is one of the biggest, you know, biggest pieces of that. And I think you largely had seen folks growing frustrated at the WTO where the U.S. would come into compliance. But what were they doing about the rest of the world? And, you know, right before all of this imploded, the United States had taken a case against China in the WTO over the fact that they had provided over $100 billion in subsidies to three crops in 1 year, which just dwarfs what the United States had done. And so we had brought that case in the WTO under the Obama administration. The Trump administration ended up winning that case before things started kind of to collapse. And so my hope is that we can get back to some of those conversations because I think, you know, for the good of agriculture, in feeding people around the world, it makes sense to have very, you know, a very solid, robust trade. And I think what's been missing, though, is a balance there that involves significantly more trade enforcement that made sure, you know, every country was kind of being treated equitably.
Fisher is co-director of the Ag and Food Policy Center at Texas A&M.
Absolutely. You can find us in a couple of different places. You know, one of those, our website, afpc.tamu.edu. We post most of the work, any of the work that we do for Congress that's made public. We post on that website. Certainly a lot of what we do is confidential for them. The other is, you know, we partner with 13 Southern universities to run, you know, a daily email service called Southern Ag Today. You can sign up at southernagtoday.org. It's free. Joe and I typically post on Thursdays or every other Thursday, policy and trade share Thursdays. And so if you're wondering kind of what we're thinking or working on in the policy space, we typically post there on Thursdays, and it's for free. It's free. You can sign up. And we have authors all across the Southern 13 states that contribute to that effort. So would encourage folks to sign up and follow us there as well.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
You know, I've had 22 years at USDA.
Dr. Shavonda Jacobs-Young is chief scientist at USDA, testifying recently at a Senate Ag Appropriations Subcommittee field hearing.
In all of that time working in the science arena and really working to advance our ability to be able to meet the challenges that we face, not only as a nation, but as a global community, as we do all of this because we want to make sure that there's no one left hungry in this world. Currently, there are over 800 million people around the world without enough to eat. And a lot of those people are right here in the United States of America. After all, why are we doing what we do? And so as we gather together to talk about ag innovation and research, you all have made some very strong statements today. I'd like to just talk about three things that I think are important to innovate, to make sure that we can meet the challenges before us. And the first one is be prepared. You've heard about the status of our buildings and facilities. We were at University of Florida when the young lady said, I take tours and then I have to show the kids our building. And that's not okay. When we look across our land grant system, we have tremendous deferred maintenance. In ARS alone, you've heard about some of the amazing work they do. We have over $1 billion in deferred maintenance. I am thankful for the support that Congress has given us to invest in our facilities, and we just hope to have that continued success. To innovate, to integrate artificial intelligence, machine learning, GIS systems, we have to have broadband. We have to have high-powered networking systems to move that data to and fro, to analyze, to share, to high-performance computing, to cloud storage. So we need all of those things. And we need professionals. Currently in ARS, NIFA, ERS, and NAS, we have 1,500 employees eligible to retire today. The 2022 census told us that our producers are average age 58.1 years old. At 0.1, I don't know what that means, but 0.1. As I get older, that doesn't sound so old. But we know that a large portion of those producers are over the age of 65. We have a tremendous need to train the next generation of ag professionals in a multitude of disciplines and diversities that look like America. I'm thankful for the $262.5 million in the NextGen program that was supported by the American Rescue Plan and further cemented in further legislation. We thank you for that. That's going to help us. So we need to be prepared. Making those investments are going to be important. We can't wait for tomorrow to get prepared for tomorrow. And the second one is push the envelope. We talked about the amazing work that's already been done by some of our scientists working together. We can't rest on our laurels. We have to continue to push, looking 10, 20, 50 years down the road, making sure that we are prepared. And then the third one is pass the baton. As many of us have just continued watching the Olympics, I know some of you know how the relay races turned out. And we know that properly securing the baton is critically important to our success. Well, that's also true in science. If all of the great work that happens here at Grand Farm stays on Grand Farm, we have failed. And passing the baton means that in agriculture, we don't do science for science's sake. There's a problem, we find the scientific solution, and more importantly, we get it into the hands of the people that need it. And so today, my 3 points, be prepared, push the envelope, and pass the baton. And I believe that we have the capacity to do all of that.
On the importance of partnering with allies.
With high tech comes a lot of data, reams and reams and reams of data. And back to high performance computing, cloud storage, how do we put all of those things in place so that we can be competitive? And as we work internationally with our partners, a lot of times we need our international partnerships to solve problems. We also have to be very cognizant about the need to protect our intellectual property, to establish, you know, basic understandings about how we operate together. Because some of these challenges are just too big for us to try to solve alone.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
We're concerned that those numbers have been trending in the wrong direction over the last 3.5 years.
Representing one of the largest ag districts in the nation, Adrian Smith from Nebraska.
In contrast to President Trump's time, where he was very, very productive, and I say that, I'm not a huge fan of tariffs. I will say they need to be a tool in the toolbox. And I think that President Trump was effective on trade because it was a high priority. When Joe Biden came to office, that priority went away. It's hard to even detect what their ag trade agenda might be because they keep backing away from the things most important to ag trade. And not just agriculture trade, but you take digital. Digital trade is very important to our U.S. economy and agriculture too, incidentally. But they refrain from talking about the aspects most important to our interests in trade around the world. That's disappointing.
From trade deficits to trade agreements or lack thereof.
Trade agreements, yeah, that is important. If we're not leading the world in with trade agreements, you know, other countries are looking around of, you know, what's happening. You know, that I like to say the cool factor for other countries having a trade agreement with the U.S. is something we should really use that as leverage. And other countries want to engage. You look at Kenya right now with a growing African continental population, that is an opportunity that, you know, President Trump teed up a trade agreement with Kenya. and then had to leave office. And the Biden administration has actually walked that back, even though Kenya already enjoys, through another program, tariff relief. It's like us saying, well, please don't lower your tariffs on U.S. ag products. That's the message coming out of the administration. That's harmful.
So what about a new farm bill?
Well, I think the biggest obstacle is that some folks in Washington want to load up the farm bill with things that aren't very farm-oriented and or agendas that are pretty narrow and not as reflective of realities of productivity out in the marketplace. Let's buckle down. Let's get this done. The producers are relying on this. We've got great examples on, in terms of effectiveness of, say, crop insurance. That's important to producers themselves. Let's make sure we get this done.
Smith is also chairman of the Congressional Ag Trade Caucus.
Yeah, we have been promoting, you know, the aspects of why trade is important. I think sometimes U.S. agriculture is taken for granted in terms of the overall trade agenda. So we want to make sure that stakeholders hear from us and that we have good interaction, good conversations of saying, okay, here's what particular trade policy means ultimately to producers and to consumers as well.
He also recently penned a letter regarding dairy trade with Colombia.
The dairy situation, you know, we, as Ambassador Dowd was saying earlier today, we export about 15% of our dairy. We have very efficient production. I think we want to look at opportunities to increase that number. Other countries get very protective. Canada is a prime example that they get very protective of their own dairy production. So we're going to have to, I think, engage more, though, to explain with other countries and to other countries that, you know, opening this up is good for their consumers, good for their industry, and we can benefit from that as well.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I know that we're going to be back in D.C. in late September.
Wade Cowan is a former president of the American Soybean Association, producer from Texas.
I know that there's still a tremendous amount of support from House members, and I think that that support is actually growing now over time. It's whether we can put the Senate and the House together. I think Chairman Thompson's done an outstanding job of trying to figure out what we need to do in this farm bill, which is a little bit different farm bill than we had in 18 when we had better prices. And so we're going to have to, you know, get those things back to where we can bring up that boat and float everybody at a higher level. If you look where the price of cotton should be right now compared to cost and stuff, we ought to be $2 cotton, $1.80 cotton. Well, that's the difference in $1 cotton in a pair of jeans and $3 of cotton in a pair of jeans. It's not the cost. That end cost is not based on actually what the farmers are getting. It's based on all the increases that occur after it leaves the farm gate. And that's true about so many of these things, whether it be your cornflakes or be soybean meal, soybean oil. We just got to get those things back in equilibrium. And it's going to be a hard road to hoe, but I think that the message that seems to be getting through is there's not enough money in Washington, D.C. to support all the hospitals and the rural businesses and school districts and everything that are going to holler calf rope and go start going belly up if you don't do something with the farm economy and let farmers make enough money so that they can pay a tax bill, and then it works for everyone, and it also increases what we see in agribusiness, because in agribusiness in West Texas right now, you can talk to nearly anybody you want to, and things are as tough as they've been in a long, long time. And you can go into these equipment dealers and they say, I haven't seen anybody 4 months. I haven't seen anybody in 6 months that want to buy a major piece of equipment. And it's because you just can't justify it. And the bankers are trying to figure out, how did we justify this year? Well, it's a lot of tricks and figuring things a lot higher than what they're probably actually going to be. And that means people are eating up equity. And when you start eating up equity, then the older guys like me, we start thinking about getting out.
Betty Resnick is an economist, American Farm Bureau.
People are really starting to raise the alarm bells about the farm economy. And in a lot of that ways, you know, this is why we need a farm bill. It's becoming very abundantly clear that the farm economy is headed into in pretty tough straits. And that is what we're supposed to have an updated farm bill for. And we haven't had an updated farm bill. We haven't had reference prices increased for the PLC program since it was put into inception about a decade ago. And that is just very tough because farmers are seeing their profits diminish and oftentimes actually be losses. So farmers are going to keep telling their legislators, keep raising their voices and saying that this is not acceptable and that we do need some change. So I think that that's one pathway is the farm bill. And that is one way we're really trying to push for at American Farm Bureau.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
We see this kind of collaborative partnership as one of the ways to put some jet fuel behind reaching into the future. When we talk about ag technology, when we talk about precision agriculture, when we talk about ag research.
North Dakota Senator John Hoeven at a recent Senate Ag Appropriations Subcommittee field hearing in Fargo.
Because you're bringing all these different sources of innovation, of funding, and of expertise together, right? And so I want you to tell me if you support that concept. I certainly hope the answer is yes. And then to expound on that a little bit.
This would be a dangerous place, but fortunately, if I said no, but fortunately, it's a wholehearted yes. When it comes to public-private partnerships, it's crucial that we work together. And one of the exciting things about Grand Farm and the cooperative agreement is that it's not just USDA and Grand Farm. It's also the connection to North Dakota State University and being able to leverage all of the resources of the land-grant institution. We've seen that bear fruit in other similar relationships. When I visited Florida, we got to see some of the exciting work that was happening with blueberry genetics because of a public-private partnership that was similar. And one of the things that was unique about that or that was special about that was being able to have USDA researchers on site with researchers from the university. And that provides an opportunity for some of our expertise, also some of our perspective in terms of working with various different types of farmers, small, midsize, and large, and what was most going to be needed in terms of research to direct that. So we're eager to continue to expand this cooperative agreement, to look at possibilities like locating ARRS employees, and also recognize the importance of making sure that the right technology and lab equipment is here to be able to fully leverage that expertise. But I'm glad that you also mentioned Dr. Siobhan Jacobs-Young because she was chief scientist when the cooperative agreement was first signed. So I'll pass it over to you if you have any additional thoughts.
Simply to say that, you know, the cooperative agreement, when that vehicle is used, means that we are entering into a partnership. So it's not a grant. It's not some sort of award. It means that we are walking hand in hand with the other party to the agreement. Mm-hmm. And so this idea about public-private partnerships, both with private industry and philanthropy, is something that, you know, your wisdom in Congress's infinite wisdom created a foundation for food and ag research because you will also recognize how important it is that we all work together. We've talked about the decline in investments in ag research. We can't afford not to work together. We have to leverage every dollar and every ounce of potential.
And I want to pick up right there. And again, thank you for being on board and helping us put that agreement together. And you're 100% right. The agreement is an official partnership to work together. The funding we bring, whether I work on that through ag appropriations or whether these great legislators that are here work to bring state dollars into it or whether these outstanding leaders of industry in the ag world that are here today bring private resources, that's the leverage that makes this a new paradigm that when I say jet fuel, I mean it. And this is about how in a resource-constrained environment, we do a lot more for the people we serve in agriculture. And so when Commissioner Goring goes in to see these legislators, we just give him a stronger hand to get those matched dollars. Or when a visionary like Greg Tevine goes to his friends at all these ag companies, large and small, and says, hey, you need to invest in this project, right? It's that leverage. It's that coming together that creates a synergy that takes us to the next level. And that's a very important concept that we want to highlight. And not only is that important for us here in the Red River Valley, that's a national issue. And we want to make sure people understand it, and we're going to put all the muscle behind it that we can. And so any ideas that you have on how we can do a better job, we want to hear them now and on a continuous basis.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
An announcement to keep pace going in rural America.
This is an announcement of $140 million with five different agreements, one in Nevada and four in Kentucky.
Agriculture Department Deputy Secretary Sochel Torres Small with the announcement in Nevada Thursday, associated with the Powering Affordable Clean Energy Program, PACE.
There's two solar power facilities. The facility in Nevada also has storage to help with that reliability piece. And then there's also some hydroelectric investments as well in Kentucky.
As part of these projects under this rural development program,
the next phase will be working on a community benefit plan, making sure that these investments really result in investments in the community, looking at land use, looking at labor, looking at jobs created, and working to make sure that it's having a real impact in the rural places we're investing in.
To date, $600 million of $1 billion Inflation Reduction Act funding has been invested in PACE projects. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.